Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for your attention. We're going to get started on time today. So we have so much to talk about. I'm Dan Gibbons from the City Club, and on behalf of our board chair, Omar Dagestani. Omar, thank you. Welcome back to the City Club. It's been a busy week, busy year so far, and a lot of talk about transit. So we're just getting started. I want to mention a few things. Today is the second, well, we talk about transit all the time. In fact, we talked about it yesterday with Speaker Welch. But today is the second panel specifically on this transit overhaul that you're going to hear about. We did have a panel a couple months ago with Senator Don DeWitt, Cam Buckner. We had RTA Chair Kirk Dillard. And we will have today's discussion more so about the legislation with the idea that we're going to have yet another follow-up discussion coming soon on implementation. So I know there's so many of you in the room that are involved in this in one way or another. As I always say, there are only so many seats on the stage. But we're talking with some ideas with labor, for instance, who's very involved in this, and others. So know that there's more to come, and we always appreciate your ideas. We also, of course, have the CTA president who's here today, who will be speaking on January 22nd. So you all know that transit is a big issue for City Club, and there's so much more to come. And we appreciate your ideas as we formulate these discussions. So thank you for, and I want to, I'll get to Tom Katark and the Civic Committee in a minute, but thank you for this joint effort and for all of you coming to these tables and to this table to move this city forward. If you would give me a minute, our sponsors are who allow us to have these discussions. So I want to thank those sponsors. And if you'd hold your applause, because there's quite a list today. Ardmore Roderick, the Civic Committee of the Commercial Club. Clayco, Deloitte, HNTB is here. Lime, the MPC, Metropolitan Planning Council. Point of Difference Strategies. White and Company, I see Pat, WSP USA, Aileron Communications, CMAP, who we're also talking with for some future discussions, DB Sterling Consultants, GFT, Representative Michael Zalewski. Where's Mike? I haven't seen him. Welcome to our one of our newer civic members, the RTA, as I mentioned, Chairman Dillard is here as well. R.M. Chin and Associates, I believe Eileen is here. Stiefel, of course, always supportive. Mayor Brown is here. I don't know if Joe Seliga is here, but we always appreciate Mayor Brown's presence. Veterans Chamber of Commerce is also here. Could you please take a moment and thank those sponsors? Every table counts, every seat counts. We filled most of them up today with a wait list, so always a good sign. And we fill them up with this incredible group of civic leaders. We have a couple elected officials. We have Mayor John Noak and Alderman Nicole Lee are here with us. Thank you for your service. Aaron Ellman from CMAP is here. Jamil Busab is here. Mary Ellen Karen from After School Matters. Joan Coogan, a great public servant. Rachel Dame from American Airlines. They've been busy. Jackie Gomez from HACIA. David Greising from the BGA. Jack Lavin, of course, from the Chamber of Commerce. Thank you, Jack. I mentioned Nora from the CTA. And Dan Lurie's here, MPC. Anthony Pacenti, Tom Powers, we call some of these recovering public servants, as is Arnie Rivera, Rebecca Scheinfeld. Here, we've got a whole category. That just kind of fit into those who care so much about our city, that work for our city or for our state, and now they're working in their roles to still further the city and the state in their civic engagement and business. So thank you to those folks. Kathy Scherer is here from Deloitte and Mike Segobiano. I mentioned Mike Zalewski. It's really a great, diverse group of people who are moving Chicago forward. So thank you for being here. Thank you for taking time out of your day to do this important work. And I mentioned briefly Tom Kotarek, and I'm gonna ask Tom's gonna actually introduce our panelists because there are a couple more elected officials that I didn't mention. So I'm gonna ask as we get started here, I'm gonna ask Assistant Majority Leader, House Representatives Evadina Delgado, Deputy Governor for Infrastructure Bria Scudder, and Chair of the Illinois Senate Committee Ram Vilvalam, to join us on this stage, and please welcome them along with Tom Kotarek to lead this discussion. And as they make their way up here, I'm just going to mention again that, you know, Tom and I, this all started with a conversation actually with Evadina and I maybe a year ago when a lot of this was starting to come together, and then one by one we all had a number of conversations. We as City Club very much appreciate our role in just sharing the stage and bringing these folks together. Tom was very instrumental in helping us figure out how to do this, how to do it in these different segments, so we hope you'll come back. We appreciate those partnerships, and I very much appreciate the friendship and partnership of Tom Kotarek, who's going to lead our discussion today. I ask you, if you have questions, we have a number of pre-submitted questions. I'll come back here in a little later, but I may be able to get out into the audience if you have a question. So I'm going to hand it over to our good friend and from the Civic Committee of the Commercial Club of Chicago, Tom Kotarek. Thank you, Tom.
Thank you. Thanks, Dan, and thanks, everybody, for being here. Sunny day in Chicago. We've got a brand-new transit bill. We're not talking about fiscal cliff. We're talking about the future. It's a pretty good day for Chicago. Pretty good day for Illinois. So before I introduce everyone, I want to put some of this stuff in context, historically, and about the civic community that each one of you are a part of. At my desk, I have a part of the Chicago Tribune from 1888, and it reads that the Commercial Club announces support for rapid transit. And it was folks like George Pullman and Marshall Field and other civic leaders who really understood that to put Chicago on the map as a global city in anticipation of the World's Fair, that we needed high-quality rapid transit. And that ultimately happened in 1893. But you may not know, in 1928, the City Club, of which you are all here, had a meeting as there was a whole host of different fights going on with the different traction and rail companies who weren't very well integrated. And the City Club came together under the leadership of Mr. S.J. Duncan, who can forget the president of the City Club in 1928, and asked everyone who were in your seats to assume leadership in the development of a plan to give adequate and integrated transit facilities to Chicagoans. And let us attack the problem from the perspective of the best interest of the whole city. And when they came up with that plan, at the key and the heart of it was integrating the transit system. You flash forward to 1999 and the Commercial Club's work on Metropolis 2020, and I want to recognize George Ranney, who is really sort of the godfather of making sure that the transit system continually evolves to being an integrated, unified system. Yeah, the transit and the transportation network that we have is absolutely essential to the Chicago region's economy. It's in our DNA. It's like oil to Alaska. It's like tourism to Vegas. This is our jam, and we have to make it work better. And today, I think you're going to hear something that's really different than what we've heard before. I went through every single video of the City Club's transit speeches from 2004. I'll give you a couple highlights of some of the words that we heard. April 2005, Frank Cruzzi, we're facing a crisis. The Illinois General Assembly has to act or else. April 26, Carol Brown, chair. The Illinois General Assembly said they needed 8 months. We're going to give them some time, but if not, we're talking massive service cuts and fare increases. May 2008, Steve Schlickman in the heart or the aftermath of a reform bill the General Assembly had, said the reform was a major accomplishment. We're going to get right on to making sure that we have a unified fare. In October of 2011, Forrest Claypool was here with a $227 million deficit. I think Evadina remembers that one. And talked about how he lamented that we have too much borrowing. We've got to do something about it. If folks saw Moody's and S&P, the debt of CTA, much of it was upgraded and likely more ahead. So to put all of that sort of in there is that we are no longer in a world of crisis. It is a growth mindset. It is something that we have struggled to do since 1974 when the RTA Act was created. And that is an enormous accomplishment, and it happens because of the three people that are in front of us today. And so in a brief introduction, everyone knows who they are, but I just want to highlight some of the things that make them certainly special about this in this legislation and this transformative piece of law. First, I'd like to recognize that, and I'll do this in the order of the bill passing. How about that? So at Halloween at about 3 o'clock in the morning, Representative Delgado, whose nickname through the negotiations became Neva, as in never give up. Absolutely tenacious in her leadership of the House Transit Working Group. I think if you ask any one of her colleagues, they'll say it was an exemplary example of her leading such a hard, hard, hard debate over many, many years through the House. And then sent that over to the Senate sometime around 5 o'clock in the morning to the chairman of the Transportation Committee. And I'll flash back to when you became chair back in January 2020 when you were appointed chair. You put out a press release and you said you're going to create and implement an open, transparent, and accountable process in which the Transportation Committee will operate. I'd say that you nailed it. 8 hearings, 40-plus hours across the region. It is another testament to how this was done the right way. This wasn't a closed door. This wasn't behind, back door, secret sort of negotiations, of which transit has a legendary past about. You went and talked to the entire state, every stakeholder over years, asked CMAP and others through the PART plan to think deeply about it, and it came together, and I think that you honored that commitment you made about the committee. And then let me speak. The non-elected official who you may not see as often, and I'm really, really excited that you're here, is the deputy governor for Governor J.B. Pritzker, who played an absolutely essential role in making this together. The leadership of the governor was essential from taking all of the hard work and getting it done and across the finish line. I've had the pleasure of working with every deputy governor who's handled infrastructure for the last 25 years, and I can tell you that Bria has the most deft political touch, the deepest understanding of policy, and does it without ever being flapped, and is something that we should all be proud of, that we have her leadership and the leadership of the governor. All right. So today we're really going to learn about what is this thing? What's NEDA? It is NEDA. Let's get that out there. And what does it mean for us? How will it work? Answer some of your questions. Making sure that this is a success is absolutely one of the highest priorities. Everyone else is looking at us. Take, for example, in Philadelphia, where they went over their fiscal cliff. Lawsuits, cuts, uncertainty. Think about what that communicates to the business community. If you're thinking about moving and headquartering, think about you as a young worker. Where do I want to be? We now have built on our strongest asset. So I'll ask a question from each of you to start about the NEDA legislation. From your perspective, what's the single most important part of the new law? And we'll start with Representative Delgado. Oh,
thank you. Most important part of the law, in my humble opinion, is that the statutory funding formula was eliminated. And this was my number one most important thing to get done, mostly because I thought it was important that that funding formula be flexible and that it change with the demand across the region. And we put in place these qualitative metrics and service standards so that funding goes to where the riders are, but also it creates opportunities to expand that ridership in places where maybe the riders aren't, but they need to be. connecting different parts of the region, job centers to communities where people need work, right? Maybe those things don't exist right now, but if you build it, they will come. And when they come, you can show that the funding needs to be there, right? So it's this virtuous circle and cycle of getting dollars to the places that they need to go, because this is all about centering the rider in the conversation. And so to me, the funding was very much, it was very important to connect that funding to the riders so that they could feel and see a better system, a system that cares about their needs and their interests. And so that, to me, is the single most important thing. I mean, I could go on, but I'm going to let you all talk.
Thank you. Thank you to the City Club for having us. Thank you, Tom, for moderating. And first, let me just say that, you know, it's been great to work with the folks up here. But this does not get done without a large coalition of people. And I want to give a specific shout out to the Chicago Metropolitan Agency on Planning, thousands of hours of staff work. I want to give a shout out to the Clean Jobs Coalition, made up of urban planning and business and other groups. And the Clean Jobs Coalition, which is made up of organized labor, that really, you know, all together brought this home. I am not going to accept the premise of the question. I cannot point to a single component. What I can say, though, is that reform and funding together, those. Two words were not just themes or mantras. They are embedded in this law on every page. And the reason I can't give you one single answer is because without the reform, we were not going to achieve the integration, the very specific strategy on safety, the accountability that residents and taxpayers who are paying into this, but also everyday riders, are looking for. And then without the funding, we wouldn't be able to deliver on that, right? We need to admit what we need to admit, and this was one of the lowest states, 17 to 18% or something like that, in terms of funding for Northeastern Illinois Public Transit. And so when we talk about what the most important parts are, I do go back to those mantras, those themes that are embedded in this law, because one without the other, or even one at a lesser extent, if we had just filled the fiscal cliff and not done the robust amount, then we would probably be back here and Tom would have another video to watch at 4 a.m. Really questioning his social life choices. I appreciate his due diligence. He's going to say, you call me all the time and ask me questions. How else do you think I know the answers? But I think it comes back to those two key tenets that are embedded in the law.
Yeah, I'm going to echo that. I can't pick one thing. But I would say that riders expect frequent, reliable, safe service. And there isn't one thing here that we can point to make sure that we can, that was included in this bill. And so, you read throughout history a lot of, policies or changes that were made to meet that goal. And so I think it was important that we, one, attack some of the specific policies that we have here, but also provide a framework that's flexible so that way we're not in a situation where, we're adding to your list of concerns that haven't been addressed. So I think it was about specific issues that we know need to be addressed, as well as a framework, and we did that here.
I'll tell you what my favorite part is. asking my own questions or answering the own questions. One, this is a comprehensive bill. This is not just a transit bill. I think this is something that has really been the holy grail of transportation advocates and policy folks for a long time. It's a public safety bill. It's an economic development bill. It's a smart land use bill. It's a multimodal transportation bill. We expand intercity passenger rail, get Metro more in the business of providing that service. It is a balance of funding legislation. It's got governance. It's got accountability. But most importantly, to Bria's point, it is service focused. And there's a piece in the legislation that shows up three times. It directs CTA, Metra, and PACE to deliver service under, and this is the legislative language, one network, one timetable, one ticket. Each one of them is directed to provide service with that mantra involved. So really the question, and I'll start with Representative Delgado, is what does that mean? What is, you know, where did that come from, and what does that mean from a rider perspective? One network, one timetable, one ticket.
Tom, I think
you're hitting on the point. It's about the rider. And so you'll hear me say that over and over again. I rode this morning to get here today. It's something that I use pretty frequently. And the future state of the system, some of you may have been here a couple of years ago, and I talked about transit being a first choice instead of having to take it because that's the only option. I think that people need to see the system as one system. Right now, we have three service providers, and they operate very much in their own silos. And I know that they do communicate to each other, so I'm not saying that there is no communication, but the way that they operate to the public is very distinct, right? I'm a Metro rider, or I'm a CTA rider, or I'm a PACE rider. But if you're just a transit rider, you want that front-facing part of the system to be seamless. So when we talk about one system, one timetable, one ticket, that means for me as a rider, it doesn't matter what service provider I'm using, it's easy for me to use, and thus it's something that I might choose first. And if we start getting people out of their cars and onto transit, I think we're going to see a huge change in the way our region functions. So it's not just about transit, but transit is something that can impact all the other things that are happening in the region. And so when you bring some of that congestion down, suddenly this area becomes much more functional, right? And when we talk about trade, when we talk about folks who have to drive for their jobs, you're making this place work better for everyone, right? And so back to the original question, one system, one timetable, one ticket, that makes it easy. If it's easy for people to use it, they'll choose it first, and suddenly that transforms the entirety of our region.
Well, from my recollection, that phrase in particular came from our trip to Germany, where we did a delegation trip working in conjunction, collaboration with DB. And my God, was that eye-opening, right? We were there for 5 days. It was harder work there than it was here. And we were there for 5 days, 2.5 days in Munich, 1.5 in Berlin, and that essentially is their mantra, right? That phrase is their mantra. They the statistics there are just so eye-opening. They have Munich has more cars per household than the Chicago area region does, but I think quadruple the annual public transit rides. So that talks about mindset, that talks about reliability, that talks about safety. Munich, I think, had 41 operators, and Berlin had 36 operators. So, you know, you can imagine us being in all of that, right, and looking at how they're able to coordinate everything over one network, one timetable, one fare. And so, excuse me, when I think of that phrase, I think of our trip to Germany and the lessons that we learned. And I'll just note that when we started this process, I won't speak for them, but there was a lot of folks that were saying, these reform, you know, principles, they're good in theory, they're good in principle, but there's no way this is happening. And I think when we went to Germany, it was we learned enough. And it's important to say that it's not that we wanted to copy everything identically from Germany, but we took the lessons back that I feel were important. And that's how we kind of had resolve to say, look, we can change the system from a governance standpoint, from a who has the authority over fares, technology, public safety, so forth, accountability, and we need to fund it. And if we do that, we can achieve this timetable. To Representative Delgado's point, there are some riders that know and have quote-unquote brand loyalty to CTA, Metro, or PACE, but most people, as the Senate President says sometimes, they just want to get from point A to point B. You know, and they want to do it quickly. They want to do it reliably. They want to do it safely. And that's what matters. And that's what that mantra reminds me of, or phrase reminds me of.
Every time I hear about the Germany trip, I get jealous. I wasn't able to make it. You know, I'm missing our friend Cam. He at the bill signing had some really passionate messages about what it means for the mom, the student, the patient who needs to get to school, their appointments, and when you have to go across systems. It's our job to focus on them and make sure that we're making it easier. I remember when I was in my 20s and looking for work, one of the only jobs that I could find was in the suburbs, so I had to take a train, a bus, and pace. And having to navigate that from the south side of Chicago, was going to the northern suburbs, was always a challenge. And I'm not sure that we've done enough since then to improve that for riders. And so I think that's what it means to me, and that was our focus here.
It definitely speaks to one of the many things that, you know, the vision of the bill has is we're doing this right some years from now when that feeling is totally seamless. And again, another contrasting story in San Francisco and the Bay Area, where they have north of 20 different operators, they're really at the part of just the part plan. You know, they're studying, how do we do this? How do we do it together? And I think this really supercharges us getting to that point. We talked about riders, but I think another important stakeholder is workers. And, you know, this bill is really addressed to making the workers of the system, you know, well-respected and to give them the tools that they need to operate the system in an exceptional way. So if any one of you would comment about what this bill means for workers.
Well, it means everything. So obviously, you know, there are public transit workers that are working in the system every single day. I think there's, you know, 33 different unions that represent over 17,000 workers in the space. And, you know, they were an incredibly important voice during this entire process. Their personal stories at committee hearings about what this means, what this job means for their livelihood, their family, and also what they deal with on a day-to-day basis, you know, as a worker, whether it's safety, whether it's collecting fares, you know, what improvements can be made. You know, why wouldn't we listen first to the people that do the job every single day? And so I think it's incredibly important to note that this legislation, first and foremost, avoided 3,000 at least pink slips going out to workers on public transit that work in public transit, and really provides them a huge relief and job security, right? As the fiscal cliff moved on, you're talking about workers that bus operators, train conductors that were making decisions about am I able to buy my child school supplies, right? That is a very real decision some of these folks were contemplating. And so providing, of course, avoiding the job losses, providing job security, but also including tenets of the legislation on, for example, safety, taking their input, understanding what's the most effective way to deal with the situations that we've seen, whether it's on the news or through videos, and taking their feedback and putting into the legislation, I think it's incredibly important. But I also want to note that we think about workers, and it's not just in public transit or those that are working at CTA Metro and Pace. Million plus people use public transit every single day in the Northeast Illinois region. And, you know, to Deputy Governor Bria Scudder's point, I've said this personal story, you know, a couple times. My mom got to this country in the 70s. She was a cashier. She couldn't use the degree she got in India. She was able to take a CTA bus to go to NEIU at night to do her computer labs with my brother and sister. They're annoying today. They were absolutely annoying when they were younger. I've said it publicly before, so they won't be surprised. But the point is that CTA bus and bus operator made it possible for my mom to get a bachelor's degree and then have a 34-year career in government and in different roles in IT. And, you know, in some ways, most ways, responsible for where I am, right? And so we talk about workers, you know, it's not just, you know, the bus operator, trainer, which is incredibly important, but it's the people that use it every day.
So Ron brings up a good point about the thousands of workers that were kind of, they were very closely watching what was happening in Springfield. And there were a number of folks who I know said to all three of us, maybe this isn't the right time to talk about this. Maybe we got to kick this to next year. Maybe this is, you know, too short of a time frame to address it. You know, maybe this is a spring issue. And for me, I said, first of all, I've been working on this for 20 years. So this is not something that just happened, right? Like, I, for those of you who don't know, I worked at the CTA when I left the city. And so I was there in the 2008 discussions. I remember them. I remember then thinking, oh, my God, if there was one thing I could fix, this would be it. And here I am. Go figure. But those thousands of workers that were worried about what Christmas looked like, that was a big driver for why I felt it was important to deal with it right now. For those of you who may have listened to my testimony at 10 o'clock at night before the committee, I think I lost it a little bit when I was talking about the workers, because I remember those days. I remember 2008. I remember 2010 when we had to lay off thousands of people. And not only for the folks that were working at CTA, but also for the folks who depend on it every day. I mean, when you talk about cutting service, those bus lines haven't come back. They're still not in service today. And so when we look at something like this, it's always about the people. This is my theme. Today's theme is about people. You know, thousands of folks. And I would be remiss if I didn't say something about labor in particular. I think Bria and I tend to be in a lot of rooms with men.
Mm-hmm.
A lot. Because we work in the transportation, infrastructure, energy space, right? And so in this case, we worked with so many incredible women. And we could talk about, you mentioned MPC, and CMAP was a big part of it. You know, Audrey's here. I see Erin back there. Like, thank you all so much. Amy right now, she was amazing, right? Those guys all working in that space. But in the labor space, which tends to be very male-dominant, Frances Oranek, amazing. Mary Tyler, amazing. These women were out there on the front lines in Springfield, defending those who are on the front lines out there on the streets, making sure that we didn't forget about these thousands of people who are going to be impacted if we didn't do something right now. So when people talk about that sheer will, right, it's always driven by that experience, not only as a writer and somebody who depends on it, but also knowing about those people and the impact.
I'd have to, of course, echo the points about the workers at the transit agencies. It was a core part, our mission, that we had to protect them in this process. And I also say one thing we hear, whether it's from the transit agencies or just people who work in the city or surrounding areas or the region, is that safety was an issue. So safety was something that we talked about, that we prioritized for everyone that has to go to work every day. And so that, I think that was a key part of it, something we hear from, again, both, you know, workforce and businesses alike. So that was key. And I think Argonne said for every dollar that we put into transit, you get $13 back to the economy for the region. And so I think for all sorts of reasons, whether it's direct or indirect impact, we had to get this done this year.
On that timeline, to talk a little bit about implementation, there is a lot of change that you have directed to the region and across the state, but the effective date is June 1st, at which point NEDA is born and RTA goes away. First issue I've ever worked on, by the way, which at the end I get fired. So to my colleagues at the RTA board here, Dennis, Erica, Bill, and the chairman, you know, I mentioned at every board meeting, we're going to turn into a pumpkin sometime between June and September. But that doesn't mean that the hard work of making sure that NEDA is successful begins now and even before. From your perspective on implementation, what are the things that the transit agencies can be doing right now? What can the RTA be doing right now to make the vision that you're that you've put into this legislation successful?
So, I mean, well, I'd start by saying we are all focused. One thing about us is that we're passionate about this. The work didn't end when the bill passed. You know, we've already talked about starting, you know, as soon as now, to make sure that we're ready for when the bill goes into effect. So some of that is, from what I know, the law enforcement agencies, the transit agencies, are already talking about what some of the safety issues are and how do we work together for the plan that's been laid out in NEDA. So that's one thing. There's some clear deadlines here that says we have to have a safety plan. We have to have a plan for integrated fare. So those are some of the things that their deadlines set out. We're working on them now. And whether it's our office working with the legislature, as well as, of course, with IDOT, we're setting the framework for what's in the legislation so that we're prepared. We're hitting the ground running. So those are some of the things. And I think the low-hanging fruit are things I think people will see once we're able to have things like transit ambassadors. I know that in L.A., they did a survey that said 60% of people who participated said they felt more safe when they saw them engaging on the transit system. So I think we thought about this from a rider perspective, we keep saying, and we also thought about it from an implementation perspective. So it's setting down timelines. It's making sure that there's accountability measures. And we're still here, at least for now, to make sure we're getting started and getting started on the right foot and working together as soon as possible.
Well, Deputy Governor Scudder, I think I'm sure she was ready on Friday the 31st. I needed a day. I always maintain college and the legislature are the only two times I've done all-nighters. But I think that in terms of what the agencies should be preparing for, obviously the effective date is June 1st. But within every tenant or core issue, it being so vast, there are components that you know, we would expect them to prepare for and move forward on. For example, on safety, I would argue there's nothing that prevents them in the legislation or otherwise from putting a messaging function on their apps that most easily, and if it needs modification, if they have one, it needs modification, allows for quick response times for our, you know, when there is a safety issue, right? Now, granted, the safety issue is, again, all-encompassing. There's going to be a task force led by the Cook County Sheriff. There's going to be a new Office of Public Safety. There's going to be a council within that office that includes law enforcement and violence prevention organizations and social service groups. That being said, all of that, and some of those meetings can start and happen in the lead-up, and frankly should, because, you know, we're going to be working on a trailer bill, and if there needs to be discussions over the course of the next 5 months, we need to know what the information should we should be looking at. But there are small pieces, right, like a messaging function on the apps that can happen relatively quickly, right? In terms of accountability, I think looking at the legislation, right, we implement service standards, performance metrics, you know, looking at some of the other accountability mechanisms. I think starting to gather information from you know, each agency, and that way when NEDA is born, they're ready to go. They have data, they have the information, now they have to make decisions, right? And I think last, what I would say is, you know, in terms of the funding, right, starting to prioritize and looking at, okay, maybe these are some of the lines we can bring back from 2008, or maybe this doesn't make sense and we're actually going to innovate this way in terms of service. I think having that information ready to go is much more helpful in this time period than not having it and then, again, waiting another 6 months for NEDA to get seated and then having some of that process. And so I would say those are some of the items where I think the agencies can be working on. And I'll end with this. Integration, 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 right? You know, every agency should be looking at, okay, this is our service. What is Metro doing? If it's CTA, what is Metro doing? What is PACE doing? Metro, if it's Metro, what is PACE and CTA? That is the, you know, that is the reason we had this conversation, and that is the reason that we passed this law, is that that integration is integral moving forward. Mm-hmm. And almost to the point where when they present to RTA, they present to NEDA, as they discuss what they're going to do, they should proactively be sharing how this could intersect with, you know, the other agencies.
So you've got three people, and we'll add my illustrious colleague, Leader Cam Buckner, as well, four of us here who are going to be consistently pushing to make these transitions happen, right? One of the things that I think we can learn from the history, in 2008, it was kind of like, okay, here's the funding, and then everybody went away. Mm-hmm. And then everybody was kind of left to fend for themselves, which is what ended up happening with CTA doing all those service cuts after the fact, is because the real estate transfer tax didn't perform. And so there wasn't enough funding, and so the CTA had to go and cut service, right? These are the things that we have learned from, and we are trying to keep from having them happen again. When we put into the legislation that there needed to be a transition plan, that there needed to be a contract put out to have that transition moved along in that process, it's because we knew this was going to be complicated. We know there are a lot of different moving pieces at the three different agencies that are going to need to come together. We also understand that RTA currently performs a very important function, and those functions need to be transitioned over into NEDA as seamlessly as possible, right? Because there's a lot of responsibility there, making sure that those things continue to happen. So I can say this. Ron mentioned a trailer bill, right?
Why did you do that?
I don't. He opened the door. The speaker said something yesterday. For those of you who are here day two of this week, speaker was talking yesterday about having an infinite mindset, right, and playing an infinite game. I did actually read that book. I did the homework. The way I look at transit is very much an infinite mindset, right? We're doing this now, and I love that we're getting so much credit for doing this now. It's wonderful. Like, this is the most popular I've ever been. But it doesn't stop here. We have to continuously work on making this the best world-class system, not only in the country, but in the world. Just like we have to constantly work to make Illinois the place that people want to live and raise their children. We want to make Chicago, I represent Chicago, I want to make Chicago the number one big city, not only in the country, but in the world. And the only way you can accomplish that is by continuously working on it. You can never stop. This is relentless. It's like parenting. Right? You just have to keep doing it every day. You get up in the morning and you push to make it happen. And I'm just very proud that I get to work not only with these people here at the table, but the other folks in the legislature that also believe in this infinite mindset. And I would be remiss if I did not say in this room that the Public Transit Working Group in the House put in, I mean, it probably equals, if not more, 40 hours, maybe more than that, and the amount of time that we spent in a room talking about all these issues. And I wrote their names down because I would forget. Leader Cam Buckner was my partner in crime, as I like to say. We still argue over who was Batman and who was Robin. But, you know, we both, I think between the two of us, we put in a lot of brain hours on this. Representatives Avalar, Blair Sherlock, Canty, Will Davis, Deuter, Hansen, Barbara Hernandez, Wen, Manley, Mayfield, Moeller, Morris, Moylan, and yes, we had a Republican, Brad Stevens. They, without their input and their efforts, we wouldn't be here right now either. And I know all of them are also chomping at the bit to come back and meet again because of this fabled trailer bill.
I think Dan's coming up with questions, but one of these things on this infinite mindset, this is a really unique time in government and public service where it's a fresh start. And this is really a call to everyone in the room in the industry to think deeply about the capacity and the resources you have to make this successful. You may have an architect, an engineer, a former transit professional, a colleague internationally, bring that to the table. There are enormous amounts of opportunity over the next 6 months, 12 months, year plus, to re-question things that we have said for a long time, oh, no, we can't do that. Mm-hmm. There's so many times just with having such a fiscal crisis over and over again, it's like, yeah, that'd be nice to do, but we can't. That's over. And now it's really going to be a question of prioritization of what the good things that we can do. That is so healthy and such a great story for us to tell. And that we're doubling down on our strength in transportation is something that, again, Chicago is sort of leading in a place where we should. Second, I know, Dan, you've got questions. If anybody else has more, please feel free to bring the hard ones.
We do still have a few minutes. Make sure this thing works. Yep. I have some questions here, but does anybody in the room have one? And if you do, just raise your hand, and I'll come and visit your table, and you can ask it yourself. In the meantime, I'll start with a couple here that have been pre-submitted, and then we'll let you guys close out a little bit later. One was about AI, well, about technology innovation. This came from Joan Hoosen from the Greater Research and Advisory. As Illinois advances, how will governance and tech frameworks ensure interoperability, cybersecurity, and AI innovation while optimizing cost? Of course, we can answer that direct question, but I think artificial intelligence and innovation is going to very much play a role in all of this. Can we talk a little bit more about that?
I think to Evgeny's point, if we're going to be a world-class city and we're going to continue to invest in our transportation system, our transit system, then we have to consider technology. It's hard to say specifically what tools we need, and I think we have a little bit of time and opportunity to figure that out. But making sure that we're prioritizing technology, it's a part of our conversations. It's something that we'll have to do. And, of course, cybersecurity is a part of that as well. So I think we'll have an opportunity to lean on the expertise of NHTSA and the service boards to help with that.
I think some of the exciting stuff that we're seeing in AI, I think that I would be surprised, frankly, if some of our service boards aren't already utilizing it. It may not be called AI in that way, but utilizing some of these large learning models to be able to take advantage of data and information that they have, right? One thing that I look forward to seeing as more integration happens related to ridership. So we, and actually it was Kirk Dillard who reminded me of this earlier, the New York MTA is now eliminating their Metro cards, right? So they are going entirely to this to be able to board the system. And we did that. We created that program back in 2009, 2010 with Ventra, right? We still have the Ventra card, but that very much that's a contactless technology, right? But there is so much data that is captured through the Ventra card. And now it's being utilized across all three systems. But I don't know whether that data is being utilized by the service boards in the way that it could be, right? Like, there is an amazing opportunity here to be able to utilize that data, to be able to see patterns, and to be able to build out service and systems that is almost predictive versus just being reactive. Mm-hmm. And that is something that I'm looking forward to seeing happen relatively quickly because while the transit system is very much it's train tracks and it's buses and trains and things like that, right? But it's very much a technology-centered service now. And so we have to use AI for good and make that happen quickly.
I'll just try to add quickly, one, you know, just for everyone's awareness, in Springfield, there's, a lot of times we have working groups and we have what's called omnibus pieces of legislation that includes a number of different bills that are on the same topic. AI is one of those premier areas of discussion where there's a number of bills that are introduced in both chambers every year. And because it's such a massive issue, they try to bring it together. And there was even an AI task force at the state level. And so I think this is a conversation that's not just happening in the public transit space, but more broadly right now, and especially, you know, everything we're hearing at the national level as well. I go back to Germany and the statistic in Munich about the more number of cars per household than here. And the reason I bring that up is people in Munich are making a conscious choice to take public transit. It's a cultural shift that needs to occur here in order for us to get more riders. And I think we can all agree, we get more riders, we get more revenue for the system, and we get more safety. More riders on trains and buses means more safety. And I mention all of that because, to their points, if we can utilize data so that people, one, can just walk out their door and know how to get from point A to point B without thinking about their travel plans, that's incredibly important. And obviously, maximizing and efficient and being efficient with your travel time is another piece, right? So, you know, my phone knows what I want. It tells me every day. And and so if it does that for me, it could do we can do that for our everyday riders, both people that are that rode before the pandemic, that haven't since, the people that ride today, and the people that have never ridden. Those are the three buckets that I explain our constituency in. That would be a very crucial role that AI can play.
I would say, too, there are needs across the state. So we've talked a lot about the northern region, but yes, we made investments to transit across the state. And so there are also particular investments in technology that need to be made there, too. So through some of the policies at IDOT and the investments, we're looking at technology both in the NIDA region and also throughout the state.
I've got a question here. I'll ask Mary Ellen to introduce herself, please.
Hi, I'm Mary Ellen Kieran from After School Matters. And first of all, I just want to thank you. It's really important for those of us who work in social service agencies that the public transit really works. I guess I wanted to just make a comment. Teenagers right now are very different than probably anybody in this room. They don't celebrate the day they go get their driver's license. They don't care. And so we can seize an opportunity right now to really include them in this, because I think transit is going to be very different when they're the adults and the workers. And so I just ask you to make sure they're involved as we move forward with this. So thank you.
I love that you said that. I spent a little time trying to follow some of the young people on social media that are transit enthusiasts, and that really makes me excited, and I look forward to getting feedback from them to know whether or not we've been successful. I think that's how we'll know, is hearing what they say. And you mentioned some people on your staff. I have to mention Michael Lynch and Jonathan Garcia are two people that were on my team that are helped me better understand some of what you're describing, so thank you.
I have a 17-year-old in my house, and I hear a lot from her about the shortcomings of the transit system. She is a Metra and CTA user, and so she will come home and report to me. I ride it a little bit less often than she does. She does it every day, right? But I think you're, Mary Ellen, you're spot on, right? The young people, I still like to consider myself young, but the youth are really, they are the ones that are helping to build the future, right? And their involvement in these conversations is incredibly important. I know that the CTA, again, I'm a former CTA employee. I know a lot more about the CTA than some of the other agencies. But the CTA has a committee of folks that provide them feedback, like the word is escaping me, an advisory board. Thank you, an advisory board. And they have a high school student who sits on that advisory board, who's one of my constituents. And so he will report back to me about those conversations as well. And so kudos to the CTA for having done that, having brought young people's voices into the conversation to help provide that feedback.
I'll just really briefly add, young people are absolutely involved with public transit. As someone that used public transit, the Brown Line, to get to high school, I can tell you that some of the statistics, we didn't get every statistic, but some of the statistics, and then people think it's just the city of Chicago, Evanston High School, Township High School students, over 80% of them get to their school by public transit. And so they are utilizing public transit. And we also included in the legislation youth that are in summer jobs get reduced fares, and that really is to remove a transit barrier, you know, for them to be able to access that opportunity without worrying about, you know, how to get there. And so I think we need to continue, and it's, that's where everything runs together. They are, they don't have necessarily some of the experiences that would deter them from using public transit. So they're actually a prime, you know, group of people that we could entice to be regular riders. And then that also speaks to technology, right? Teenagers are more on their phone than I've ever been, right? And so if we can, again, speak to them in that way and make it easier for them, they're prime for utilizing public transit.
Thank you. I'm doing my best, Phil Donahue. I'm over here. And thank you, Mary Ellen, and After School Matters for all that you do to provide those opportunities for the teens. Of course, this is all very real. Jack, would you introduce yourself, please?
Sure. Jack Lavin, President and CEO of the Chicagoland Chamber of Commerce. First of all, I want to applaud you. I think we should give them another round of applause. Look, they put so much time and effort into this bill, and at one point it looked like it was not going to happen. Nobody was happy. Maybe a great compromise bill is when everybody's not happy, but it's still a bill that works for everybody. And in order to have a business community that's going to grow, we need a world-class transit system. You guys put it together, and we're so thankful and grateful for what you did. Public safety was always a number one concern. I'm glad to hear everybody's starting to meet, because that is still going to be one of the things that gets riders back there. But the question I want to ask is kind of a personal and professional. Tell me about paratransit, rider access, particularly rideshare programs. If this is about the rider, the community of people with disabilities, one of the best things that happened were the rider access programs. And that was in the bill. It changed a few times. But this was really important to the disability community. And just maybe you could make a few comments about paratransit, how important that is, and how the bill ended up. Thank you.
So I'll start by saying that the first question Tom asked, I had a couple of different items, but one of the very important pieces of this legislation is that there is a creation of an office that is dedicated to service for people with disabilities. And the reason I say that's important is because there has never been coordination across all three agencies on that particular topic. And while PACE serves the entirety of the region with paratransit, having accessible stations and vehicles is incredibly important. And again, CTA has their own process, PACE has their own process, and METRA, I don't even know if they have a group of folks dedicated to that, right? And so this is one way that we're creating some cohesion across all three systems. The folks who depend on transit, who are also people with disabilities, I think benefit tremendously from that, to be able to use mainline service, right? To be able to expand and create more connectivity for paratransit and also for the Rap and Tap program, which is what you're referencing, right? Being able to access rideshare programs. Again, that only works if there's mainline service being delivered in those areas. So if there is not a bus that runs through that portion of McHenry County, there is not paratransit service. And so, again, this is all connected, and it's important for us to be able to build out that system so that those services can continue to grow, which is why having one office that is housed in NEDA across the entirety of all three agencies, I think, is going to be transformative to the service that's available.
I think I would add quickly that, again, tying the funding to service standards brings us back to that, and making sure that we took their feedback at the table. So whether it was through advocates, us reaching out, we made sure that they were part of the conversation.
If we can keep this very quick, I'd like to fit one more question in, please.
So John Trotter with WSP, Senior Vice President there. I'll be very brief. I was going to ask a question about development, but hats off to the legislature and Governor Pritzker, because we were facing a fiscal cliff in every area of the state. And the work you have done and Governor Pritzker has done is quite amazing. So thank you so much for that.
Thank you. And thank you all. And I don't assume we're ending, but I just want to make one important comment. this legislation and now law was for the entire state of Illinois. We talked a lot. We are in the Northeastern Illinois region. We've talked a lot about the Northeastern Illinois region. It had the most dire fiscal cliff situation. But make no mistake, and do not let anyone convince you otherwise. There was $130 million for downstate transit agencies. We redirected $475 million to make Quad Cities to Chicago a reality. We move forward on Peoria to Joliet to Chicago, and so. You know, I understand there's narratives out there. I understand there's conversations. We can always do more, and we will. But this was for the entire state, and it isn't connected. It is important to understand it is connected. We're opening up opportunities, frankly, I think, for someone like a metro operator to look at these opportunities like they did with, you know, Chicago to Rockford and back, and say, look, this is about connecting the entire state. So I just want to make that comment. Thank you.
And we've 30 seconds if anybody wants to.
I was just going to say, we talked about this a lot, but when we talked about NIDA, we mentioned some of the marketing, like NIDA ride, NIDA solution. we were really focused again on the rider, on the constituency across the state. And I just want to thank the people up here. We worked a lot together. And we like each other. If you can, you can tell that.
We spent a lot of time together.
Thank you.
I will close by ditto to that. The team that has worked on this just really truly believes, they're true believers in this issue. And so it's been a pleasure to have these conversations. I also want to mention the staff that helped make this possible, particularly on the House side. I think sometimes, you know, we're the ones that are sitting up here, but it's often those hours of staff time that really makes things come together, and drafting legislation and drafting language, and trying to get it as tight as possible so we don't need to have trailer bills, but, you know, 1,000 pages, it happens, right? But I want to thank Marco Mendez, who is here. He's my chief of staff. Where are you, Marco? Right there. I want to thank Sakthi Kumar, Dorothy Reinhardt, and Eric Halverson, who are on the House staff. They put in innumerable hours doing research, drafting language, answering questions, and creating a shared drive, which was super fun for me to try to explain to some of my colleagues how to use that. So it was great. It was great. So thank you. Before we end, I want to make sure I say thank you.
I don't want to get in trouble, so I'm also going to thank both the Senate Transportation Committee members. I don't have their names by heart, but they were on this journey for 3 years, and from the committee really represents the geographies of the entire state, and that's what made it so powerful. And then I also want to thank my staff in Springfield, Maddie and Savannah, but also Vitan, my chief of staff's in the audience as well. But we got it done together. And I think, you know, to the points that have been made, I think it's incumbent not just upon us up here, but all of us to make sure that what's in the legislation and law comes to fruition, right? Because there's just too many people counting on it. And so that's the vigilance that we all need and collaboration we all need moving forward. Thank you.
Great. We need more time to talk about this. That's a really bad dad joke. But we will be back. Thank you, Senator Villavalon. Thank you, Representative Delgado, Deputy Governor Scudder, and Tom. Tom, especially, thank you for pulling a lot of this together. This is where the rubbers meet the road. The steel's beating the rail. It's about families, it's education, economy. You all heard it today, and it's wildly important. And thanks to that historical context, my little guys like trains and they like YouTube, and I hope you all realize that in 20 some years a lot of our children will be watching these videos, and you're all making history today, because this is today. It's years in the making, a lot more to come, but this is historic. This is monumental. Thank you for sharing it at City Club. Thank you all for doing all of your parts in this and in the future work. There's a lot more to come. There's more to come tomorrow. If you were here yesterday, we'll try to switch up the menu for tomorrow. I won't go through all the programs, but you all have this by your seat, and it's a new little QR code. You can check out all the programs. Many of them are sold out. We always hold some seats for members. I mean, talk about transit. We've got Nora Learson. We've got Gia Biagi from IDOT. We've got Mike McMurray from Aviation. Of course, Tony Preckwinkle. This is all in January. So there's a lot more to come, but then there's so many other great programs that are not necessarily transit-related that I think you all will appreciate as well. So please, check those programs out. Come back. Continue to support this great work that these great public servants are doing. And again, thank you for sharing this all with and at the City Club of Chicago. Have a great day.